Don't have enough time to stay across all the latest news? ABC News Top Stories podcast explains the biggest breaking news stories and why they matter in less than 2 minutes. So you can hit play and get updated while brushing your teeth or making your lunch. And it's always up to date, ready whenever you're ready to get across the day's news. Just search ABC News Top Stories podcast on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
From Wondery Country, I'm Luke Sidham Dundon, and today on The Breakfast Wrap, as Pauline Hanson makes a play out west, the Coalition considers what to do about the rising threat from One Nation and ponders a call to work together to avoid cannibalising each other. The opposition leader doesn't sound too keen, so where is the Coalition heading? We'll hear from a senior Coalition Senator, James Patterson. Then there is plenty happening around the world. Foreign Minister Penny Wong will be here to discuss Iran, and we'll also head to Belfast as violent anti-immigration protests target some of the city's most vulnerable.
This horrific things we're witnessing is just shocking. The ethnic minorities are being scapegoated and it's not them to blame. I'm sorry to sound so both frustrated, annoyed, but I'm also terribly, terribly sad. I mean, I thought this was behind us.
The former Deputy Speaker of the Northern Ireland Assembly is coming up. From the Radio National Breakfast team, this is The Breakfast Wrap. Yesterday was a pretty good day for Pauline Hanson's One Nation party. She flew into Perth for a pretty jubilant rally, raising more than $1 million in a single day. It comes as Liberal politicians consider whether to strike a preference deal with the insurgent party, and one frontbencher suggests that they should actually join forces. That was the message from Liberal MP Tony Passon when he spoke to The Australian, saying that One Nation has a decision to make. Does it want to cannibalise the Liberal Party or work with it to ensure a Conservative government is elected? It's quite the proposition. I'll let our political correspondent Tom Crowley and Sally Sara get into the backdrop for this calculation.
Tom, this is a lucrative journey for Pauline Hanson West. It was met with protests outside the venue, but the crowd inside was showing strong support.
Absolutely. They were whipped up into a frenzy, really, this crowd of a few hundred people who paid $70 a head to come and see Pauline Hanson for what really felt like a campaign rally. There's no other way to describe it, except other than perhaps it almost sounded like a victory speech. Have a listen to the rock star reception that Pauline Hanson received from her supporters as she came out.
Senator Pauline Hanson.
You have no idea how I feel. 30 years ago when I entered Parliament, it was 30 years ago in March, so I was first elected to the House of Reps as the first independent woman. I was totally alone, I had no one, I had everyone basically having a go at me. I was called a racist, I was called xenophobic, I had no idea. It's taken me 30 years and guess what? I never gave up on my country and never gave up on my country.
So quite a bit of enthusiasm there, but more of it online, where this fundraiser that she called Fire the Liar raised more than $1.5 million at current counting in a single day. That is half of what One Nation spent in the entirety of the financial year around the last federal election, and that is just in the space of one day. So One Nation sending a pretty clear signal that it wants to be regarded as a major party force. Hanson, in a lengthy speech defending her policies against people who say she doesn't have any, coming under greater scrutiny on that front, and declaring a focus particularly on Labor seats and Labor ministers, and having a very direct crack at Anthony Albanese. Here's what she said about that.
We've actually reached over 1,050,000. $250,000 from you people. All I said was, fire the liar. So that tells you something. I heard under that guy. Albanese put out his fighting fund. Guess what? I think he's only raised about $20,000. So that tells you something, that we are on the right track. And I'm going to target those Labor seats, not coalition, target the Labor seats.
So five ministers there on Pauline Hanson's hit list. Whether she'd be competitive in any of those seats, who knows, but it's a direct attack at Labor. Tony Passon saying the Liberals and One Nation should sit down and say, look, you'll run in this seat, we'll run in that seat, and we won't run against one another. Now, that would be, you know, essentially a merger and something that even the Liberals and Nationals don't grant one another when there's an empty seat currently. They are happy to run against one another. It's a preferential voting system after all. Tony Passon's own fears in his own seat, probably something to do with that. He's in the rural South Australian seat of Barker, and the seats that were within that in the South Australian election went One Nation's way. So perhaps he's a little concerned. Kind of interesting, though. He's on the front bench. So the Liberals scrambling to figure out what to do about this. Pauline Hanson really behaving in a different way, like a national campaigning politician.
Tom Crowley there. Well, Senator James Patterson is the Shadow Minister for Defence. He is a senior coalition member, and he was on the program to discuss developments overseas. But halfway through the interview, Sally asked him this about One Nation.
Senator, on domestic issues, recent polling indicates One Nation's support is increasing and its financial support is increasing as well. In your view, should the coalition do a preference deal with One Nation at the next election?
I think conversations about preferences now are premature. I've been involved in allocating preferences at coalition campaign headquarters in previous elections, and you cannot make a final decision about which candidates you'll preference in each seat until you know who each of those candidates are, because some political parties, like One Nation, have demonstrated great difficulty in choosing appropriate candidates for public office in the past. I mean, as recently as the South Australian state election, One Nation endorsed someone who was wanted for crimes in the United Kingdom as a candidate. And political parties generally don't want to be associated with that brand risk and have an implied endorsement by their order of preferences. So we can't make any final decisions on that until we know who the candidates are. I think our focus should be on re-earning the trust that the Liberal Party has lost in recent times from our traditional supporters before we even contemplate arrangements with any other political party.
So just so I understand, you think you need to wait to assess individual candidates. It's not a matter of principle, a decision that can be made long before then?
No, we never do deals on a national basis where we guarantee we're going to preference a particular political party in every position in every seat. It varies around the country. It varies seat by seat. And one of the really important factors is to know who those candidates are. I don't want to find ourselves in a position of putting someone second or third or fourth on our ticket who turns out to be someone who's not appropriate for public office. I mean, Pauline Hanson has publicly said she is concerned about the fact that extremists have infiltrated her political party. Now, Pauline Hanson is worried about it. I think all of us should be concerned about it. I think, frankly, One Nation has a lot of work to do to get themselves into a fit state to contest the election, and they need to go away to do that work, and the Liberal Party shouldn't contemplate preferencing them until we've seen that that's been done.
Do you agree with your colleague Tony Passon's suggestion reported in The Australian this morning that Liberals should strike a deal with One Nation so that the two parties don't run against each other in the same seats?
No, I don't. I think the Liberal Party is at its best when it aspires to represent all Australians, and every Australian should have the opportunity to vote Liberal or National, and we should provide that opportunity by running candidates in every single seat. I am not interested in dividing the spoils with another political party 2 years out from the election and, frankly, hitching our wagon to their brand with all the risks that that entails between now and then. Who knows what policies One Nation is going to come out with between now and then? Who knows what candidates they're going to endorse? Who knows how many of their MPs are going to defect or found to be have been invalidly elected between now and then? I think the Liberal Party needs to focus on earning back the trust and support of our traditional voters who we've lost before we contemplate any arrangement with any other party.
This is what opposition leader Angus Taylor had to say about the suggestion a short time ago. Let's take a listen.
No, there's no plan to carve up seats. We won't be doing that. What we will be doing is focusing on a Labor government that's taking this country in the wrong direction, with higher taxes, with less houses, with immigration that has not been in line with our housing supply, and with an energy system that is broken. And that will be our focus. It won't be carving up seats.
Does it concern you that One Nation is able to raise $1.5 million from supporters in a single day?
No, political parties fundraise all the time. And I think the debate this week about Labor Party fundraising and One Nation fundraising was a massive beat up. Political parties seek support from their supporters all the time so that we can finance our election campaigns. I wish other parties good luck in doing that. The Liberal Party has a strong program of fundraising for the next election.
Pauline Hanson has rejected claims One Nation Senator Tyrone Whitten is ineligible to sit in Parliament. But Professor Anne Toomey says the WA Senator could be in breach of Section 44 over a family company which has contracts to help build the Snowy Hydro. Do you have concerns about Senator Whitten's eligibility?
I think on the face of it, Senator Whitten does have a case to answer. I think it is at least a risk that he was not validly elected because of the contracts the company he was a shareholder in had with Snowy Hydro, which is a government business enterprise. And I think it's up to One Nation to demonstrate some leadership here. It is an option available to them to seek that he be referred to the High Court so the High Court can adjudicate this matter and put it beyond doubt.
Coalition frontbencher and Shadow Defence Minister James Patterson there. So, if you're wondering what to make about those comments on One Nation, let me briefly bring Tom Crowley back in.
That was one of the more extensive critical comments directed at One Nation and absolutely kiboshing the idea of either some sort of electoral map carve-out or some sort of preference deal at this stage from James Patterson. We haven't heard anything like that really from many Liberal moderates. So to hear it from a figure who at times has been viewed as one of the leading figures in the conservative wing of the Liberal Party, it's consistent with the way that James Patterson himself has spoken for a long time. It's easy to forget. It feels like a long time ago now, but under the leadership of Susan Lee, he gave a really significant speech where he said that they should reject the Farage Trump style push on the right, and they should reject the idea to become teals on the left, and they should stay their own thing in the middle. That idea has become unfashionable with at least some colleagues. There is a lot of disagreement, even on the right wing of the Liberal Party, about how to deal with this.
And that is the political correspondent for Radio National Breakfast, Tom Crowley. It's been another big morning of developments in the Middle East. Overshadowing Israel's continuing invasion of Lebanon and also the violence in Gaza and the West Bank, the tit-for-tat strikes between the US and Iran are keeping this particular conflict firmly atop the global headlines. This, while there is supposedly a ceasefire still in place. The US has launched what it's called additional self-defense strikes on military and surveillance targets in Iran. This in response to the downing of an American helicopter in the Gulf. Meanwhile, Iran has been attacking US bases across the region. This morning we spoke with Australia's Foreign Minister, Senator Penny Wong. She's at a meeting of counterparts in Europe this week, and here's what Sally asked her first.
Does the Middle East ceasefire have any weight at this point?
We've said for some time it's obviously a fragile ceasefire, but we've also said that what Australia wants is a negotiated end to the war. That's what we're calling for, and that's what we will continue to press for. That's in our interest, Australia's interest. It's also in the interest of people around the world who are, like Australia, suffering the impacts of the effects on global energy markets.
Australia has joined 21 other countries in issuing a statement condemning the alleged activities of Iran in their states. Beyond that condemnation, what further measures is Australia considering?
Well, you would know we already have very stringent sanctions on Iran, and you will know we took stronger diplomatic action against the Iranian regime as a consequence of the revelations and the advice to us that they were involved in organising some of the anti-Semitic attacks on Australian soil. We expelled the ambassador and we listed the IRGC, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, as a terrorist organisation.
Can Australia play any role in de-escalating the conflict currently?
We're not a central player in the Middle East, as we have said. What we can do is add our voice to others who are calling for a negotiated end to the conflict. It's obviously one of the things we discussed today with the United Kingdom and has been the subject of discussions in our meetings this week, which have included Germany and France. Mm.
Earlier today, as you're saying, alongside the Defence Minister, Richard Marles, you held talks with your UK counterparts. Mm. What was top of the agenda and what's come out of those discussions?
Well, the first point is that these engagements are all about our work to strengthen Australia's relationships with other partners. And you know, that imperative is so important in a world that is much more contested, in a world where we see much more conflict. For us to make sure that Australia has trusted and trusting relationships, stronger relationships with other countries is a priority of the government. And that's really been the driver behind our visits to Germany, to France, and of course here in the United Kingdom. We have a very close relationship with the United Kingdom. We obviously are working on AUKUS together. That was central to the discussions, but so too was what is occurring in the Middle East and what is occurring in our region. It was a very good day of work, which was obviously the culmination of a lot of work between officials over many months.
On the federal political front, we've seen One Nation raise more than $1.5 million in a single day. What's your message to Australians who have already or are considering throwing their support and their funds behind One Nation?
First, I'd make the point that I'm less interested in what Pauline Hanson fundraisers. I'm more concerned about One Nation's policies, just as I am concerned about the fact that the Liberal Party and One Nation seem to be working together, and that it appears to be very clearly that a vote for One Nation is actually a vote for the Liberal Party, and a vote for the Liberal Party is actually a vote for One Nation.
Are you concerned that One Nation is explicitly targeting Labor seats?
I know that One Nation will continue to press for its political interests. What we will press for is what we believe is good for the country. And that's why, you know, the government has handed down a budget which is about seeking to deal with some of the deep concerns so many people have about the housing market in Australia. It's why the government has made it a priority to lift wages, to deliver income tax cuts, and of course to deliver Medicare.
An image of your face has been used on the One Nation website for its fundraising campaign, which it's titled Fire the Liar. What do you think of the way that the political fundraising is currently being conducted for One Nation?
I don't think getting engaged in sort of these personal attacks is particularly helpful. Like I said, I'm not interested in the personal discussion. I'm interested in what One Nation's policies are. What I do know and what we all can see is that they are very good at provoking anger, but they have very little to say about what solutions.
And that is Australia's Foreign Minister, Senator Penny Wong. We're going to end with another story that we've been covering this week. The unrest and violent anti-immigration protests that have engulfed parts of Belfast in Northern Ireland. They continued for a second day. Police used water cannons on protesters as some people threw bricks and bottles at officers. The family of the victim of the stabbing attack that triggered the public response has described the violent protests as completely unwelcome. And the alleged attacker has now been charged and remanded in custody. But as you're about to hear from our next guest in Northern Ireland, there is a lot of concern for the safety of migrant communities in Belfast. Groups of masked men have been storming into people's homes, burning some, smashing shop fronts, and intimidating people. And overnight, police in Belfast raised concerns about what is being called a hit list, apparently containing a number of addresses. They've said that it would be a criminal offence to share personal information with the intention of endangering someone. There are real worries about how the migrant communities in Belfast could be targeted in coming days. Jane Morris is a former Deputy Speaker of the Northern Ireland Assembly. She was actually one of the architects of the Good Friday Agreement. She joined Radio National Breakfast this morning. And here is one of the questions that Sally asked her.
What do you think about what happened in reaction to this stabbing attack in Belfast?
Well, I have to say that the past 3 days since Monday has brought pain to my heart and tears to my eyes. The terrible, horrific stabbing that we all have seen on social media. And then the awful backlash, which has been all over our screens, seeing families put out of their homes because of the colour of their skins, and just stuff that I thought I would never witness in my city. I was born and bred in Belfast, and, you know, obviously there were the days of the Troubles that I lived through. I was a teenager when they started, but that was, you know, so, so long ago. And this horrific things we're witnessing is just shocking. And calm has got to be restored. And it is being restored, I'm glad to say.
The response to this stabbing and the unrest on the streets, what does that tell you about what's happening in Northern Ireland right now?
People are allowing themselves, certain people are allowing themselves to be whipped up by anger and frustration and things that are not the fault of those they're attacking. They're blaming immigration, immigrants, people of ethnic minorities for issues that are serious. Very serious housing, health service, waiting lists, all the things that are broken in our economy. The ethnic minorities are being scapegoated, and it's not them to blame. And there are not enough people pointing that out and saying that it is our health service is being propped up by foreigners. You know, foreigners are not people to be attacked or blamed or vilified. I mean, they add so much to our society. And people have got to start seeing that.
What needs to happen now to deal with this situation more broadly, Jane, in your view?
Well, first of all, with the statement from the family of the victim, Mr. Ogilvy, appealing for calm was very, very important. And I think that has been welcomed. And then the next thing, and a very important thing, is all the political leaders have got to stand together against this. All of us are shocked at what we're seeing, you know, families being forced from their homes. I mean, with babies leaving their homes and their homes are burning. I mean, you're seeing this all, I'm sure, in your images. But this is stuff that's far, far too shocking. Everyone should be standing up against this and staying stop. And of course, people who are in the crowds, egging people on and doing this, you know, they should be brought to justice. And a couple of people have been arrested, as far as I'm aware. And so, but then, of course, another problem is our marching season, which is coming in July. And we're used to this sort of, not this bad, but this sort of behaviour in our marching season. But now that it's directed at ethnic minority. And another important thing is that we need to stand stronger and firmer about the wonderful contribution to our society that these people make when they come here. These are people who've come here to make a living and to help a society and to add to our cultural diversity. And that's what we desperately need here, is cultural diversity. I'm sorry to sound so both frustrated, annoyed, but I'm also terribly, terribly sad. I mean, I thought this was behind us, and it's just a very, very sad to witness, but frustrating and infuriating as well.
Jane Morris there, the former Deputy Speaker of the Northern Ireland Assembly. She was one of the architects of the Good Friday Agreement. Well, thank you so much for listening to today's episode of The Breakfast Wrap. All of those interviews, presented by Sally Sara, produced by the Radio National Breakfast team, and Oscar Coleman produced The Breakfast Wrap. I'm Luke Siddham-Dundon. We'll be back in your ears tomorrow.